day in the autumn of 2007, we were sitting in class when we heard a fearsome roaring from outside. Everyone, students and teachers, ran out to the courtyard and looked up. A swarm of giant black army helicopters darkened the sky overhead. They whipped the wind around us and stirred up a storm of dirt and sand. We cupped our hands over our ears and tried to yell at one another, but our voices were drowned in the din. Then there was a plunk as something landed on the ground at our feet. Plunk, plunk, plunk. We screamed, and then we cheered. Toffees! The soldiers were tossing candy down to us. We laughed our heads off as we went scrambling to catch toffees. We were so delighted that it took us a minute to understand what was going on. The army had come to rescue Swad from Fazlullah. We cheered and clapped and jumped up and down. Candy was falling from the sky, and peace would be coming to Swad. Soon soldiers were everywhere. Helicopters were even parked on the Mingora golf course. It was strange to see the army in Swad. We'd been praying for someone to stand up to Fazlullah and his men with their black turbans and Kalashnikov rifles. But now our town was swarming with men in green uniforms and Kalashnikov rifles. Practically overnight, Fazlullah's men disappeared like snow melting into the ground. But although we could not see them anymore, we knew they had not gone far, only a few kilometers away, and Mingora remained a tense and frightened city. Each day after school, my brothers and I would race home and lock the doors. No more playing cricket in the alley. No more hide and seek in the street. No more candy from the sky. One evening, we heard an announcement from the loudspeakers atop the mosque. The army had imposed a curfew. We didn't know this word, curfew, so I knocked on the wall to Safina's house so someone next door would come to the hole in the wall and explain. Soon Safina and her mother and brother came to our house and told us it meant we had to stay indoors for certain hours of the day and always at night. My brothers and I were so scared we didn't even come out of our rooms. We stayed inside and peered through the curtains at the empty street in front of our house. That night, a streak of bright white light flashed across the sky, lighting the room for a second like a flashbulb on a camera. Boom! A thud shook the ground. I jumped out of bed and ran to my parents. Khushal and Atal came running to join us. We all huddled together, shaking. The dishes clattered, the furniture shook, and the windows rattled. Then, within minutes, the army's gunfire began in the outskirts of the city. With each blast and shot, we gripped one another harder until we drifted off to sleep. The next morning, we woke up as if we were coming out of a long, fitful dream. After a night full of bombing, the air seemed oddly still. We dared to hope. Was it possible that the army had defeated the Taliban? We peeked out the gate and saw knots of people from the neighborhood gossiping. My father went to find out what had happened. He came back inside, frowning. The rumor on the street. The Taliban were going to take control of Swad. The military operation was ineffective. Our hearts sank. The army sent 10,000 more men, and the fighting raged on and on, night after night, for a year and a half. I was always the first to run to our parents, and my brothers quickly followed. And since the bed was now too crowded, I had to sleep on a pile of blankets on the floor. Even in the middle of a war, I was able to be irritated with those two for stealing my spot. Strange as it sounds, we got used to the bombing and shelling. Sometimes Atal slept through it, and Khushal and I came up with a system to figure out where the fighting was. If the fighting was nearby, the electricity went out. If it was farther away, the power stayed on. There were three types of attacks, and we learned to distinguish them. Bombing was done only by the Taliban, sometimes by remote control, but other times by suicide bombers. Shelling from helicopters and cannons fired from mountaintops was the army. The third type, machine guns, was used by both. I used to get afraid at night, especially during the bomb blasts. From my spot on the floor in my parents' room, I recited a special verse from the Holy Quran, the Ayat al-Kursi. Say it three times and your home will be safe from devils and any kind of danger. Say it five times and your neighborhood is safe. Say it seven times and your whole town is safe. I said it seven, eight, nine times, so many times I lost track. Then I spoke to God. Bless us and protect us, I'd say. Bless our father and family. Then I'd correct myself. No, bless our street. No, our neighborhood. Bless all of Swat. Then I'd say, no. Bless all of Pakistan. No, not just Pakistan. Bless all the world. I tried to plug my ears and picture my prayers floating up to God. Somehow, each morning, we awoke safe and sound. I didn't know the fate of all the other people I'd prayed for, but I wished for peace for everyone, and especially peace for Swat. One day my prayer was answered. The army hadn't won, but it had at least driven the Taliban into hiding, if not away. Chapter 10, 2008, What Terrorism Feels Like. Somehow, daily life continued, despite the bomb blasts and killings. School remained a haven from the insanity of a city in the middle of a war. It wasn't always possible to attend between the bomb blasts and the curfew, which could be enforced any time of day. And sometimes, noisy helicopters flying overhead made it so we couldn't hear a thing, and on those days, we would be sent home. But if the school opened its doors, I was there, ready to spend time with my friends and learn from the teachers. My friends and I had now moved to the upper school, and our friendly competition got even more competitive. We didn't just want to get good grades, we wanted to get top grades. It wasn't just that we wanted to be the best, although we each enjoyed it when we were. It was because when our teachers, like Miss Ulfat in primary school, said, "Excellent," or "Well done," our hearts would fly. Because when a teacher appreciates you, you think, "I am something." In a society where people believe girls are weak and not capable of anything except cooking and cleaning, you think, "I have a talent." When a teacher tells you that all great leaders and scientists were once children too, you think, "Maybe we can be the great ones tomorrow." In a country where so many people consider it a waste to send girls to school, it is a teacher who helps you believe in your dreams. And I had found a great new teacher in our upper school headmistress, Madam Mariam. She was bright and independent, everything I wanted to be. She had been to college. She had a job earning her own wage. Now that we were in upper school, the subjects became more difficult. We took algebra, chemistry, and my favorite, physics. And even though our teachers had only a blackboard and chalk, we were free to go as far as our curiosity would take us. When we were learning about chemistry, one girl stopped the class to ask a question. "If everything is made up of atoms, what are atoms made of?" Another asked, "If electrons are constantly moving, why isn't this chair I'm sitting on moving?" The teacher put aside the day's lesson plan, and we all asked questions to our heart's content. But mostly, what we talked about those days was the army and the Taliban. All the people of Swat were caught in the middle. One friend used to like to annoy me by saying, "Taliban is good, army not good." And I would always reply, "When you are caught between military and militants, there is no good." The trips from school had become tense and frightening, and I just wanted to relax once I was safe inside my home. One day, I arrived ahead of my brothers, thrilled I didn't have to fight with Khushal for the remote for once, and settled in to watch my new favorite show, Shararat, which means making mischief. It was just a Bollywood comedy, but I loved it. I turned on the TV, and all I got was static. I switched stations, more static. I tried every station, nothing but static. At first, I thought it was another annoying power outage. We'd been having them every day. But that night, we found out that Fazlullah's men had switched off all the cable channels. They said that TV was haram. It showed the westernized world, where women have love affairs and do not cover their hair. With nothing left to watch but the official government television channel, we were all but cut off from the outside world. Fazlullah, meanwhile, kept broadcasting his sermons. Girls should stay home, he preached. We did our best to ignore him until the day I came home to find my father with his head in his hands. Oh, Jani, he said, the world has gone mad. Fazlullah and his men have blown up the girls' school in Mata. My heart dropped. The school Fazlullah had destroyed was a primary school, not even a school that taught teenagers. He had bombed the school at night when it was empty, but how cruel this man was, hurling firebombs at a place where little children wanted only to learn to read and write and add. Why, I wondered. Why was a school building such a threat to the Taliban? I whispered a quick prayer for the children who'd lost their school and another to protect the Khushal school. Please, God, I prayed, help us protect our valley and to stop this violence. Every day, Fazlullah's men struck a new target. Stores, roads, bridges, and schools. Most of the attacks were outside Mingora, but soon they got closer and closer. One day, I was in the kitchen cleaning dishes, despite my best efforts to avoid them, and a bomb went off so close that the whole house rattled and the fan over the window fell. Before I could even react, the power went out. I learned that this was how it happened. Bomb, then darkness. The Taliban bombed us, and then the power went out for an hour at least. A few days later, the Taliban struck again. A funeral for one of the victims of their last attack was being held in a nearby building. As the mourners gathered to pay their respects, a suicide bomber blasted himself. More than 55 people were killed, including members of Moniba's family. I had grown up hearing the word terrorism, but I never really understood what it meant. Until now. Terrorism is different from war, where soldiers face one another in battle. Terrorism is fear all around you. It is going to sleep at night and not knowing what horrors the next day will bring. It is huddling with your family in the centermost room in your home because you've all decided it's the safest place to be. It is walking down your own street and not knowing whom you can trust. Terrorism is the fear that when your father walks out the door in the morning, he won't come back at night. Now the enemy was everywhere, and the attacks came out of nowhere. One day, a store was destroyed. The next day, a house. Rumors flew. The store owner had crossed Fazlullah and had helped the army. The man whose house was targeted was a political activist. A bridge was blown up one day, a school the next. No place was safe. No one was safe. Our family tried to carry on as normal, but we were tense all the time. Bombings became such a regular part of our daily lives that we fell into a routine every time we heard a blast. We called to one another to make sure everyone was safe. Khaista, Pisho, Bhabi, Khushal, Atal, we cried. Then we listened for the sirens, and we prayed. This kind of random terror made us do strange things. My father started taking a different route home each evening in case someone was studying his routine. My mother avoided the market and my brother stayed inside on even the sunniest days. And since I had been in the kitchen both times there were blasts near our house, I stayed as far from that room as possible. But how can a person live when she is afraid of a room in her own home? How can a mother buy food for her family if the market is a war zone? How can children gather for a game of cricket if a bomb could go off under their feet? Nighttime was the worst. When darkness fell, we all startled at every creak and jumped at every shadow. Nighttime was when Fazlullah's men carried out most of their attacks, especially the destruction of schools. So every morning, before I rounded the corner on the way to the Khushal school, I closed my eyes and said a prayer, afraid to open them in case the school had been reduced to rubble overnight. This was what terrorism felt like. In 2008 alone, the Taliban bombed 200 schools. Suicide bombings and targeted killings were regular occurrences. Music shops closed, daughters and sisters were prevented from going to school, and during the month of Ramadan, we had no power or gas in Mingora because Fazlullah's men had blasted the electricity grid and the gas line. One night, when a blast hit especially close to our home, I went to my father's side. "Are you scared now?" I asked. "At night, our fear is strong, Jani," he said. "But in the morning, in the light, we find our courage again." Part 3. Finding My Voice. Chapter 11. A Chance to Speak. Day or night, my father's courage never seemed to waver, despite receiving threatening letters as well as warnings from concerned friends. As the school bombings continued, he spoke out against them. He even went to the site of one school bombing while it was still a smoldering wreck. And he went back and forth to Islamabad and Peshawar, pleading with the government for help and speaking out against the Taliban. I could see that my mother was worried at times. She would hug us close and pray over us before we left for school and as soon as we came home. And she sat late into the night with her phone in her hand, trying not to call my father every hour. She talked to us of plans for what we would do if the Taliban came. She thought she could sleep with a knife under her pillow. I said I could sneak into the toilet and call the police. I thought of the magic pencil I used to pray for. Now would be as good a time as any for my prayer to finally be answered. Back at school, my friends and I wondered what we could do. So Madam Mariam and my father worked with us on essays and speeches in which we expressed our feelings about the Taliban's campaign to destroy girls' schools and about how much our own school meant to us. We planned an assembly where we would make our speeches. We called it a peace rally, but it was just going to be a handful of us upper school girls. The day of the assembly, a Pushto TV crew arrived at our school. We were excited and surprised. We didn't think anyone would care what a group of girls had to say about peace. Some girls were nervous, but I had given a few interviews by this time, and I was a bit more comfortable in front of a camera, although, truth be told, I did still get nervous. We were a democracy at the Khushal school, so every girl would get a chance to speak. The older girls went first. They talked about our friends who had quit school out of fear. They talked about how much we love to learn. Then it was Moniba's turn. Moniba, our public speaking champion, stepped to the front and spoke like a poet. "We Pashtuns are a religion-loving people," she said. "Because of the Taliban, the whole world is claiming we are terrorists. This is not the case. We are peace-loving. Our mountains, our trees, our flowers, everything in our valley is about peace." After Moniba spoke, it was my turn. My mouth was as dry as dust. I was anxious, as I often was before interviews. But I knew this was an important opportunity to spread our message of peace and education. As soon as they put a microphone in front of me, the words came out, sure and steady.